So everything that's being said will be recorded. I've noted up here that it's going to be posted on the CSRES website. We don't know for certain that it will actually be our website, but from our website we'll be able to direct you to where you'll be able to see that transcript. As you offer your comments, and I understand that many of you have already signed up to provide comments, we ask that you use the microphone. It's really important in order to pick up what you're saying for the record, the official record, that you use the microphone. Please state your name, the institution or organization that you're representing, so we make sure that we have a record of that. And then hold the microphone out a ways from your voice. You don't have to hear yourself booming through the room, but the real key is that by using the microphone, it gets picked up by the recorder's machine. We've set the day up with 5-minute speaking allotments. That doesn't mean that you're going to be limited to only 5 minutes in the course of the day, but we want to make sure that everyone that wants to speak gives an opportunity to speak. So at the point that we have no one else waiting in line that has signed up for a speaking time, we can open it back up. We'll try and still hold it to small blocks of about 5 minutes. Again, so that as we have a second round, as many people get an opportunity to speak as possible. Our schedule for the day, we're already a little bit behind, but I can assure you that those 10-minute blocks up there are going to go faster than 10 minutes. So we're going to move through the afternoon with the welcome that we just got through, some comments from Mike Fitzner for the agency, a brief background of the program, a little bit on the RFA structure, and how the program worked this past year. What we anticipate could be the timetable for the 2010 call for proposals, and then we'll move into the comment period. And I'm expecting that will happen by at the latest 20 minutes after 2. And so as you can see, we're going to have about 3 hours this afternoon to accommodate comments if that's how you want to spend the afternoon. And that's the important part of the day, is hearing what you want to tell us. It's through your comments that we're going to be able to determine what the best way to implement this program is to meet your needs. So your comments are very important. I would add that in addition to the oral comments today, there is a written comment period that will extend until April 29th at the close of business Eastern Time. And we would encourage you to submit either hard copy comments by mail, by FedEx, or they can be submitted by email to an address that I will show you at the end of the block. And all three of those addresses are listed in the Federal Register notice that was published this past Monday. So as we move on, let's go ahead and pass the program to Mike Fitzner for his comments.
How are you? How do we sign up to make a comment? Just by doing it out there?
I believe there's a separate sheet out on the outside, and I'll go check on that for sure.
I think you just need to put in a star by your name.
Okay, I'll go ahead and get started. I'm Mike Fitzner, Director of the Plant Systems Section at CSRES, that's the Cooperative State Research, Education, and Extension Service, Federal Department of Land Grant University System. And I'd like to just thank you for taking the time to join us today to share your ideas on how you see us better administering this program in FY 2009 and future years. I want to assure you that we will take your suggestions and ideas into careful consideration as we make plans for the future years of this program. We do give this input in a variety of ways. We, of course, all of us at CSRES are members of various multi-state committees. There's various workshops, conferences like this. We always hear from people in the halls. We get a lot of stakeholder input in a lot of different ways. And this is a formal way of doing that. And so it's really important that you carry your all comments into this room today or send them into us through email so it's officially part of the record. And that will really have a big impact on how we got the program in the future. So, again, thank you very much for coming. I have only one slide to show you. That's not that. Okay. So, what I'd like to do is just give you a little background on why it was necessary for us to make some changes to this program in fiscal year 2008. And, of course, that does trace back to the 2008 Farm Bill. And here on the screen you see the actual language in the Farm Bill that basically required us to begin competing the funds in this program. That's the favorite 3D funding for pest management. A very simple change to the wording, just a few words, a new sentence or two, and has, as we all know, dramatic impact on the way we manage programs. So there were really two different aspects of the Farm Bill that required us to make the changes that we did in 2008, and that was this particular language that requires the competition of the funding, and then also language that required us to expand the eligibility of those funds beyond the 50 1862 land grant institutions and six territories to include the 17 1890 land grant institutions, Tuskegee University, and the University of District of Columbia. So there's 19 newly eligible institutions for the funding for a total of 75. So that is why we're basically here in the room today, is that the Farm Bill made these changes to, these required changes to the way that we administer the program. So again, that's not debatable. That is a fact. That is the language, that is the law, and as an executive branch agency, we're required to implement the law. So that set forth in motion the process that led to the RFA, which we've gone through that one cycle now, and now we're getting ready to go into the second year, fiscal year 2009, and that's why it's really so important that we hear from you, many of you in this room, key people in Extension IPM programming. We need to hear your ideas, your suggestions on how we move forward on this program. So with that, I will turn it back to Marty to keep us moving through the agenda and hopefully get to your input.
So now we have a slight change. Hold the mic a little closer to Mike. No, I think we'll make it through. We do have one small change with the way that you'll request a time period for speaking. We only have one person that signed up in advance, and I think what we'll do is just go ahead and go in order in the room, and you can request by a show of hands if you need to go. I know I've got one person that needs to go early so that they can catch a flight. Anybody else has those considerations, just let us know, and we'll make sure that you get an opportunity to speak early in the process. So we want to talk a little bit about our background, where the program came from, just in very broad strokes. If you go back and look at the origination of this program, it actually started out as a competitive program in 1971, a very small pilot scouting program that through the 1970s then saw increases in funding to really get us to the level that we're at today. We really have not seen significant changes in the program. The other issue that occurred was in 1978 when the program was moved from a competitive program to a formula program. Since that time, it was really that one single change in the Farm Bill of 2008 that led to a substantive change in the way the program is authorized. And so as we look at having to move the money out to our partners, and their ability to operate the program, that change from formula to competitive is really the biggest difference in the program over the years since 1971. So we've had a long history and some tremendous progress that's been made and some tremendous impacts that have been made by the states, by the universities, and their ability to run these integrated pest management programs. And it's made a difference for producers. I want you to realize that we recognize the impact these programs have had. Now, if we look at this change in the way the program has operate, and we look at the other things that are happening in the climate today, we can say there are opportunities in this process. And how we take advantage of those opportunities is really up to each of you. It's up to our agency. It's up to all of us to try and figure out ways that we can show attention, draw attention, shine a light on the programs that we're operating. And really, one of the driving forces behind moving programs from formula to competitive is an accountability issue, showing that you actually are making a difference. And so when we talk about developing impact statements, it really is an important thing in being able to show that we do make a difference in the programs that we have. We do know that from this past year that certainly the need, the demand for IPM services and the demand for funding for the programs is very high. We look at the 2009 requests, and many people were very conservative in their requests. We saw a request for about twice as much money as we had available to provide to the program. And I fully believe that it could have been a much higher number than that. We had some very very conservative requests that came in for the program. But when we think about this, and we think about some of the other things that have been included in the Farm Bill and some legislation since that time, certainly IPM principles are really at the foundation of a couple of other things that have gained a lot of attention, such as organic agriculture, sustainable agriculture. IPM is a big part of how those programs work. IPM has a role in improving water quality. We talk about water quality programs versus IPM programs. It's really, in my view, just which end of the stream you're talking about. It's what goes in versus what's coming out. Farm profitability, reducing adverse environmental impacts, and reducing risk to human health. 3 points directly out of the IPM roadmap that really are critical when we look at the operation of agriculture today. If we look at the distribution of funding from the 2008 formula program versus the 2009 competitive program, one of the things that you're going to see is a similar range in awards, with the top end a little bit lower and the amount of the average award a little bit higher. In part, that's because we're seeing three fewer awards going out the door. So there were funds that were available because of those formula programs that were not being funded. We also infused some additional cash into the program from another program, the support program, that had previously been the special projects program. So we're looking at about a $200,000 increase in the available funds for coordination in this last year. Just as a reminder to everyone, the categories and the caps that we had used this last year, this is really kind of the foundation of the 2009 program, where we were trying to come up with some categories that would help you describe the programs that were out there that were active, that were effective already. This may not have been as complete a list as we had hoped that it might be, and we're looking forward to you giving us some guidance on additional categorization that would better describe the breadth of programs that are out there. The cap amounts in those categories were really drawn up in a fairly arbitrary manner, but we thought that it somewhat represented the emphasis of the programs that were out there across the country. I want to emphasize that as we look at the rules that guided the 2009 program, those could be used as a guide for the 2010 program. They may not be used as a guide for the 2010 program. It depends entirely upon what we hear back from you. There are things that you think were valuable in that set of guidelines. We'll probably take that into account. If there are things that you're telling us that were really problematic, we also want to be able to hear that and include that in our assimilation of all the comments as we try and determine what the program will look like this next time around. So what will we expect in the RFA process for this next year? One of the comments that we heard back from the peer review panel is, you don't want to do this every year. The programs don't want to write proposals every year. If we get on a one-year cycle, a year-to-year cycle, it will destroy the continuity of any of these programs. And so we're hearing that likely going to a multi-year program would be an effective way to improve the program We don't know what that time period should be. If you're in favor of a multi-year program, we'd like to hear from you. If you have an idea of what you think that duration should be, please let us know. We believe it's somewhere in the range of from 1 year to 4 years. We're probably looking beyond 4 years. We may have to look for some special dispensation to allow that. But a 2 to 3 year program, I think, would be very easy for us to make happen. There's two different mechanisms that could be used to fund multi-year programs. And I mention this because it does have an effect on how much funding is available on a year-to-year basis. We can either use a continuation process or full initial funding of new proposals. Just to give you a little bit of detail on how that would work, what the implications of that type of program would be. This is not by any means a complete list, but I want you to think about this as a contrasting list between the continuation type program and a full funding model. So in a continuation process, you would say that this project is going to be funded. We have the funds in hand to fund the first year, and successive years will be funded on available appropriations in that year to fund it. So the next year, you'll get funded at the same level. If we have a flat budget, if we have a reduced budget, you would see a reduction in the amount that would be coming to your program. In a full funding model, you would see that your successive years of award were contained in that first year. So you've got a three-year program. All 3 years of funding would come out of that first year of funding. This would mean that you would wind up with more programs funded in the continuation cycle. You would have fewer programs funded in the full initial funding model. In the continuation model, everyone that would be funded, you would wind up committing the dollars for whatever the term of the application process was. So if it's a four-year process, you would have programs that had not been funded would not be eligible to reapply until there was new money available, which would be at the end of that cycle. So you could effectively be frozen out for two, three, or four years. In a full initial funding model, in the second year, there would be a new competition with the new money that comes into the program. So I would imagine that if you had not been funded in the first year, you'd be eligible to participate in a new competition next year. So you'd have a staggered model where part of the programs would be funded each year. So that's the reapplication issue that I'm talking about here. More programs funded in the continuation model, fewer programs funded annually in the full initial funding model. I mentioned already about how reductions would affect the funding. In the continuation model, there would be a reapplication process that would have to occur each year, but it would not be as full an application as you would see in that initial year of funding. So it's essentially saying, yeah, I'm still here. Send me the money for year two. Send me the money for year three. In the full initial funding model, there would be no further application required. So there are different models, different ways of doing it. It all becomes an issue of how many programs we believe need to be involved to have an effective network, if indeed a network is what we're looking to have. So that really gets us to the point where we're looking for your input. And there were a number of questions that were listed in the Federal Register notice. And we've kind of aggregated the questions and broadened them a little bit into these five that we think would provide us with very good guidance for where we need to go with the criteria in the next RFA. And those are, what do you believe the role of CSRES funding is in state, regional, and national programs? What part do we play in the whole process? We know that the level of funding that we're providing is not funding your entire program. We understand that that's the case. What should the primary goals and objectives be of an extension IPM program? What do you think we should be targeting in that RFA to describe what this program needs to be? And that really is going to be a reflection of what services your programs are providing to your clientele. We'd like to hear ideas on how an Extension IPM program can be targeted to engage all eligible institutions, not just 1862s, not just 1890s, but all institutions that are eligible for participation. We'd love to hear your ideas on the evaluation criteria. How can we most objectively, are there ideas you can give us that can help us understand what the most objective ways would be for us to look at proposals in general and determine their quality, determine how effective they are, and determine how appropriate they are for the needs in the given area that they're addressing. And then, last of all, are there specific program areas that you believe need to have national support and have the potential of being able to service each of the institutional programs that are out there across the country? Something that would be broad, something that would provide something, an umbrella over function that all programs probably have, but need some additional support, or they may be something that only a few states have, but it's still a common need for those programs. So with that, I'm going to open it up to comment. And Pete Bedell has asked to have the first comment so that he can make his way to the airport. And so go ahead and open it up. And I would mention that, remind you all that please use the microphone. Probably if you hold it about a foot and a half away from your mouth, that would be about right.
Do you want specific comments?
It could be any kind of comment through the process. We would hope that these kinds of these points would be addressed, but we really want any kind of comment.
Do I need to
introduce
myself?
Yes, thank you.
I'm Pete Goodell. I'm with the statewide IPM program at the University of California, located at Parlier, California. I want to thank, first of all, you guys for having this session, and I know you're kind of stuck.
Hold on,
I know you're stuck. I didn't say anything more. I know you're stuck with having to be the bearer of bad news, but there's two comments I would like to make, and that is, one of them is that I really think when you empanel the next group and about to evaluate the next round, it's really important that they understand that this is not a research project, it's an extension program. Now, if you want an extension project, short term, that kind of a thing, we can write that as well. But what we were doing this year was really to support that infrastructure, which I think other people will also address. I think that it's difficult. I'm not sure how I would have looked at those proposals because it's just extension programming is very convoluted, particularly 20 pages. One of the things you might want to think about, you already mentioned it first off, about the first competitive grant program, the old IPM demonstration. I think if we look back on the record, we'll find that very few of that, once the money was pulled out of those programs, once the growers weren't getting their money anymore, pear program, the cotton program, a lot of them just went by the wayside. So that's one of those things that says, give it legs, you need an infrastructure, is what I'm trying to say. And I'm also, my second comment is I'm very concerned about who's going to capture the overall national IPM efforts and successes. When I became IPM coordinator, the director basically said, oh, don't write your report except on the money they gave, which was, you know, a 10% or so of what our total funding was. But I felt that we in California and the nation in particular wasn't getting the full value of all the things we were doing and could share. So now all I'm going to report on is that little bit of money I'm getting. Who is going to capture all those great things? And that is one of the things. Now, of course, I guess we could always write it. But again, it looks like it's going to be Chris type report. It's not going to be really confusing to me, I would say, the least, if you're doing lots of other things. But, so those are my two concerns, is that you know, not only the network, but who's going to capture some of the experience that I would not know about in Arizona because they only reported on a couple of projects. So with that, I'll stop.
Um,
Paul Jepson, the IPM coordinator for Oregon State, for the States of Oregon, and director of the Integrated Plant Protection Center. And I've got a small number of comments to make. Firstly, I recognise the need to move beyond the formula fundings that don't recognise the distribution of effort and intensity of issues between states. Secondly, I'd like to recognise Mike and Pitzer and Martin Draper for their ability to communicate effectively with us, cajole us and encourage us and to sustain us through a difficult process. So I thank you for that. I think a lot of us do that are involved in it. Comments not in any particular rank order. First, a comment about the multiple segments, the categories that were there. There's one aspect of fairness that I believe personally is rather fundamental. We were asked to apply for a minimum number of the programme areas and up to a maximum number, which I believe was 7, but the total page length of the grant was set. I've heard from numbers and have myself received criticism by the referee panel for not supplying enough information in some of the areas I applied for, and I applied for 7. And I believe this is extremely unfair and does not stand scrutiny. It's far fairer and I think appropriate to set a maximum length per segment, such that if someone applies for 3, they'd submit a shorter package than if someone applies for 7. Setting a maximum length is fine, but having a maximum length within the process is just a simple matter of fairness to help the panel. Secondly, on the subject of monitoring and evaluation, which I conduct scholarly research about, I can't say I'm a leader in that field, but I find it fascinating. We heard in conversation that the grants that were rated as excellent had used the logic model construct to present their impact models. And I hope the NEPA or CSRES will recognise there's a diversity of opinion on the usefulness and applicability of the logic model. If that diversity was to be recognised, there is a stream of literature that argues that IPM activities in extension and education are about empowerment of farmers and improving their ability to adaptively manage their crops, and that is the most difficult thing to measure the impact of. And some of the items that we've seen listed as possible impact measures don't scale up to the quality of the current thinking in that debate, and that, I think, is something that needs to punch at its weight, not below its weight, in terms of allowing us to present different ways of talking about impact and the difficulty of doing that. Thirdly, I accept the difficulty of having flexibility in the allocation of our funding, but one of the things that we do as IPM coordinators, many people in this room, is apply limited resources to tackle new and emerging problems where growers, commodity groups, environmental groups, urban groups come to us with a critical issue that needs urgent attention. Our ability to generate leverage of funding and programs by initiating activities with this money, I think, is extraordinary. And I praise many of my colleagues here who taught me how to address this, and I've been learning how to do it, and I think we've been effective. We've had 8.97-fold leverage of our grants on average, of our Smith-Lever funds on average in the past 3 years, which I think is quite a good message. I believe my ability to offer that leverage to the system and have it recognised in the future will be impaired if I'm working on a regular grant funding cycle. Final point, I wonder if the IPM coordinator network can ever any more be mandated, if it ever was done, I guess, by the NEPA or the CSRES as it transitions. Because if a state goes through a gap in funding for several years, does it still have the requirement to have an IPM coordinator designated, and where will the funds to support that program come from? It's not the responsibility of the agency necessarily to fully fund that, but in this transitional period, it's worth reviewing what the value and role of the IPM coordinator network has done. The risk, I believe, is losing some very significant leadership nodes within states, and also a risk that extension, which plays a huge role in important transformations in agriculture, will be recognised less. My final point is, as I made in one of the extension IPM presentations the other day, that by 2050, based on current demography, we've locked in a population increase to 394 million people in this country. And with a phase of reduced access to food imports inevitably coming upon us because the population of the world is increasing, I believe we and other extension faculty are going to play an enormous role in achieving yield increases and productivity increases that our nation will expect of us. So I don't say these things lightly. I think we've got an awesome challenge. And one little Smith Lever program is not going to make the difference between success and failure. But to me, it's symptomatic of a concern for rapid evaluation of short-term programs that don't necessarily offer some of the continuity that this time and funding could enable us to provide. Thank you.
Okay, my name is Clayton Bollier, that's H-O-L-L-I-E-R, not pronounced as it looks. And I'm with the, IPM coordinator and plant pathologist at the LSU Agricultural Center. These comments are really a group effort from the Southern Region IPM coordinators. First of all, and we're giving very specific recommendations at this point, but it is our belief that we should increase the duration of the awards or the projects to 3 years rather than one, with continuation in years two and three contingent upon the available funding, one of those things that Marty showed earlier. Another item that we agreed upon was that the RFP for the 2010 funding should be released in mid-July 2009 with the applications accepted for 8 weeks after release. There was quite a bit of debate at this point because that's a terrible time of year, but there really are no good times of year. And at least if we stretch it to 8 weeks, that may give us opportunity to be able to do those things that we must do that time of year, plus address the RFP. Another item was the proposed product project should be based on a kind of a two-tiered system of funding, that there is a base level for coordination. And that the funds and activities of the IPM coordinator should be at least $50,000 per year for that category. And all other elements, including the areas of emphasis and collaboration, would be grouped differently. Number one, that the collaboration effort would be reduced to $10,000 per year, emphasizing the fact that collaboration is important, but not to the $25,000 level we had this past year, still encouraging collaboration, but really to cover the costs of administration more than anything else. And that the areas of emphasis be eliminated in the categories that we have, and the funding caps be eliminated, so that states have a bit more freedom to emphasize those areas that are important in their states, allowing for concentration in one or two areas. And maybe going above the current cap levels that were given this past year. And we encourage that whoever is in charge of this process I really proposed that the Smith-Lever 3D funding be increased for the future. One thing that I would like to add after reviewing my own evaluation from the reviewers is some sort of template that might be given to the reviewers so that they all are looking at the same things. There's a diversity of comment and question on my own, and it may be true of others too. And some of that I totally disagree with. And for example, there were things stated that were not present in the packet that were indeed present. So some sort of template and a score sheet, if you will, for the reviewer to look at to make sure all elements are present. Thank you.
So the mic is on now. Okay. Thanks. I'm Diane Olson, IPM coordinator for Utah. I have 9 or 10 comments. I'd like to start off by echoing what Pete Goodell said earlier about making sure that the Institute, I'll use that term, do I get brownie points, is aware that this is an extension program and not a project program. And so it's very critical to make sure that as the reviewers are evaluating the proposals and the RFA is being prepared, that it is done so to support ongoing programs and not just this idea of projects, as we are more familiar with competitive grants. The second number of next comments I want to make directly pertain to the RFA, and a number of these have already been stated, but I think it's important to restate things that we think are important so they show up multiple times in the record. So this has to do with this idea of these different program emphasis areas, and we are allowed to select a number of them with a minimum number allowed and a maximum number allowed. But it was very difficult as I was writing or working on on my proposal because there was so much overlap between emphasis areas, and I felt like we were required to repeat ourselves extensively in each of these sections, thereby using up some of our precious page space to basically say some of the same things over many, many times. And I also felt sorry for the review panel because they were going to have to read these things over many, many times. And I almost felt like I was writing laundry lists rather than really being able to explain what I was doing in my program. And so I'd like to see that addressed as the RFA is revised this next time around. Also relating to the RFA about these funding caps that my colleague just addressed, I would also like to see an increase in that coordination section. I thought 50,000 was a good number, but something more than 25,000 that doesn't represent very much infrastructure to a state program. And as a part of that, with the collaboration component, if this program, RFA, is to be encouraging collaboration between states within a region, across regions, $25,000 is not very much money to encourage that collaboration. So I felt we either need to increase that to really help build collaboration or do away with it and just say that this is inherent in all of your emphasis areas, that we require collaboration or some level of collaboration will exist, and thereby you can put it into your different emphasis areas. Okay, another comment on the RFA about the budget. I felt like the budget was also difficult to write. Now I'm sounding like I'm whining, and Pete commented on doing such a good job of not whining his comments, but I felt the budget was difficult to write because you were breaking it down as if you were a project, again, and not a program. And so to have to break out an IPM project leader's salary time into many different categories, 2,000 there, 10,000 there, I thought was just It was like doing busy work. And I don't think we need to be doing that. We need to talk about how this, we need this IPM project leader in our state to help lead this extension program, and this is what this person will be doing. I don't need to be breaking out their salary into a bunch of different categories. I do apologize for warning you guys. I'm not really. I'm just trying to give very specific, hopefully helpful comments. Something else about the RFA. I think it's very important to maintain the diversity, the flexibility, and the funding areas. And what I mean by this is, for example, if we allow downgrading of things like home garden IPM as compared to commercial ag IPM, that's going to hurt states where maybe the home garden IPM is a real critical area. And I don't think it's for the national level to decide what's important in each state. I think that should be left to the state program. And so I think we need to treat the different areas that you might be doing IPM education in very equally and allow each state to make the case of why that's important and not have a review panel that's saying, well, if it's corn and soybeans, that gets extra points because that's big acreage versus somebody who wants to do master gardener training. For that's just an example. Okay, now comments about, missed one back on this page. The proposal review, we talked about this in our WERA 69, the Western Region IPM meeting, that we felt it was important that the review panel include the center, the IPM center directors as ex officio members. And the reason we felt this could be very helpful is they're not voting members, they're not there to sway votes or scoring, but they're there to help provide some perspective. So a question came up on, you know, why does a state want to do this? That center director, maybe, if it was a relevant area to be doing work in, could speak up and explain that, and it could help just with some understanding across this very diverse region. And I can imagine this could be especially important for, say, some of our Pacific Islands or other Puerto Rico, where, it's just a very different situation than in most of the states. Okay, now on to program implementation. Again, I think it's important that this program allow for some flexibility to address new emerging issues. And so, especially as we likely will move to a multi-year funded program, if 3 years ago you did not anticipate that a particular pest was going to be now present in your state, and your hands were tied as far as not allowing new extension efforts in that area, IPM efforts, that would be a real shame. So we need to make sure that we incorporate enough flexibility that allows, again, the states the latitude to address new emerging issues as they come up. Okay. I'll also repeat a comment earlier about the IPM coordinator network. And I think that the success of IPM education in this country is really based upon having this ongoing, continuing network. And so it would be a shame to lose this. Research networks are based more on where there's a need in the state, and I hesitate to say this, but being a female, I do often feel like sometimes it has been a good old boys club, and you're only invited in if you fit. And I think it's important for extension to maintain that equal opportunity for all states and all people to be involved. And my final comment, I probably used up more than my 5 minutes, I apologize. I also would support the funding multiple year proposals. I tend to prefer the continuation model. However, I would recommend maybe some modification of that. And that would be to allow, I like the 3 year duration projects. I think that's a reasonable time. But I don't like the idea of having, if you're not successful one time, to be blocked out then for 3 years. I think that would be a failure to have the program go that way. But more of pay-as-you-go, allow that there may be, I don't know how the structure might work. I'm not good at thinking at things, just complaining about things. But come up with some way that there were some funds available for every year so that, you know, you wouldn't be blocked out if you didn't get funded in 1 year. And I believe that Sarah has a model something like this, where it's a pay-as-you-go. And contingent, of course, on good productivity, etc. That's it. Bring it to you, Jeff. Joe.
My name is Joe Kovach, and I'm the IPM coordinator in Ohio. I have a few comments. First of all, I just want some nuts and bolts on last year's RFA. One thing, I would like to thank Marty for giving us the template for the budget. Although it was difficult to write, that helped me at least focus on how to write it so that it was acceptable. So I thank you for that. The second thing about the RFA last year was I understand the need for having everything be at the same font and the same margin width. However, if you're going to do that, don't say you can write a proposal single-spaced or double-spaced. Choose one or the other. As a reviewer of many proposals, I prefer single-spaced. I know that then the page limit will have to change accordingly. I also agree with a lot of my colleagues that if you're going to keep these areas of emphasis, you need maybe to at least put a page limit within that area of emphasis so you're not penalized if you're from a diverse state. Now, on some of the general ideas that I have. We had an internal review of the Ohio State IPM program, and one of the things that our stakeholders said, including faculty and extension personnel, was that they really liked the mini grants program. There is no opportunity in the current format for this mini-grants effort. I feel the mini-grants gave us as IPM coordinators an opportunity to address new and emerging pest issues. It helped get cooperation and collaboration within our state. And it was a good means for accountability. They were accountable for that money to me because I would hammer them if they didn't get it. Therefore, I was able to show progress to you guys. As I was reading last year's RFA, and on page 15, it said, in future years or under certain circumstances, CSRES may determine that they will support continuation awards. I think we are under certain circumstances. Having an economy that is in distress and haven't seen for multiple generations, I think these certain circumstances really are that we should go to the continuation model. As you know, our state extension programs are downsizing, and it's very difficult to plan. So I would like the continuation model for 3 years would be. The other thing that I would support, and I know the North Central IPM coordinators group will be presenting some additional ideas, and I just want to say I support those so that you can put extra tick marks by those. But I also support the idea of moving some of the EIPM support funds into the coordination pool, as well as taking the regional IPM extension funds and moving those into the extension or the coordination pool. To address Diane's concern about a continuation model, and some people might not be able to get all their award money, or you may be locked out if you get a 3-year proposal, I would propose holding back those funds that I just talked about, the support funds and or the RIPM extension funds, and those groups that weren't funded to the mean level would be targeted to get additional funds for the next year, given that they would write a good proposal. In other words, those that were very successful would get their funding, but they would not be allowed to compete with our lower group, or the group that maybe for some reason had poor proposals that would give them an opportunity to improve their proposals. And in this way, I think that would be consistent with my value system. I feel a national IPM system that involves all states and territories is a good thing. And I think that we all should, those successful programs should help support those that, for whatever reason, need less money or can't get the money. Finally, on the review panel, what I would like is at least have one or two IPM coordinators serve on that committee. Obviously, they would have to recuse themselves from their state or their region, but I think it would be very helpful to a lot of the other review panelists to understand what we do. And with that, I think I've said my piece. Thank you very much. Oh, one other point. Sorry. The mini grants can also be a way to include other eligible institutions. You, let's say, as an IPM coordinator, I would be able to give that institution a mini grant of some sort just to help them get the process going. So that's why also I think the mini grants would be a good deal.
Thank you. Next.
Steve Brown, I'm Assistant Dean for Extension at the University of Georgia. Just a couple of quick comments. I'm very concerned in our state about funding our basic IPM infrastructure, and I think many of the other states are in the same position. We obviously have to have multiple funding sources to have a successful IPM program. It can't be just federal or just state. But I think in Georgia, at least, we are much more likely to get state money or commodity group money to fund special projects, special emerging needs. But we basically are failing right now to support an infrastructure. And for this reason, I would support changing the proposal to increase the amount of money for coordination above the $25,000 limit. And the rationale there is that we need an IPM coordinator, obviously. We've got to have support personnel for that IPM coordinator, a secretary, an accountant, a technician, possibly. We've got to fund that kind of infrastructure to make this work. And secondly, we've got to fund our diagnostic labs better. We're struggling to fund the diagnostic labs that we feel are necessary to support IPM programs. So I would encourage also upping the amount of money available in the diagnostic lab category. The federal funds would help us tremendously to do that. It's a hard sell to the state and the commodity groups for for the program as a whole. We can sell the individual projects, but we can't sell the program infrastructure. So the federal money would be a great support for those areas. And lastly, I'd also like to throw in my support for the three-year continuation modeling for the funding.
I'm Jim Dill. I'm the IPM coordinator for the state of Maine. I'm also the chair of the Northeast Research Extension and Academic Programs on IPM. And the few things that I want to say here are a result of our meeting on Monday from the Northeast group. And so here they are. First, we feel there should be an increase in coordination funds to at least $75,000. We think that the collaboration should be eliminated as a given category, but it should be addressed in the proposal as an inherent part of the program. The areas of emphasis, we say leave them as they are, but remove the caps from them. Let each state decide which one and how many they want to address. And if they are going, if there is going to be areas of emphasis, we would suggest adding livestock to that, and possibly a miscellaneous category, because I think if I've heard from other people ahead of us, not everyone has a square peg and a square hole to fit it in, so we think there should be a miscellaneous category. We also think there should be a total cap on the whole proposal of $300,000. So I think this year it was like $650,000 or whatever. We're not really in favor of a multi-year proposal if it eliminates some of the states. We would be in favor of the continuation model as long as there's enough funding there, basically, so that everybody could be funding it if they have an acceptable proposal. And the last thing is that we feel that it is critical to request and receive at least $20 million of funding for the 3D program in FY 2011. Thanks.
I'm Robert Wright with the University of Nebraska, Extension IPM Coordinator, and I'm representing NCR A201, the North Central Multi-State Coordinating Committee for IPM. And this statement is based on our meeting this Monday. We talked about the fact that historically a strength of the Extension IPM formula funds was that it enabled a national network of Extension IPM programs in the states. Extension IPM coordinators have advanced IPM by assessing stakeholder needs and building teams to develop and deliver research-based educational programs that address these needs. And we spent a lot of time talking about the critical importance of maintaining this national network of IPM coordination. This is important to ensure the continuation of the teamwork and capacity within the states necessary for the rapid response to pest problems that threaten the U.S. food supply, the environment, and human and animal health. And therefore, we recommend the following elements be incorporated into the next RFA for USDA's EIPM coordination program. And there is a lot of good that came out of the first RFA, a lot of good elements, obviously a lot of thought that went into that. And it's interesting how many of the regional committees seem to think similar ideas, although we did not, at least I did not coordinate with any of the other committees, but we have some similar ideas. We also suggest or recommend to raise the cap for the coordination component to $75,000 annually per proposal, recognizing the importance of the coordination function in IPM programs in the states. We also recommend to eliminate all other caps for other areas of emphasis. Let people, the proposers, decide what areas fit their needs and justify their budget requests appropriately. Also, to add new areas of emphasis for livestock IPM and vertebrate or wildlife IPM. Also, cap the total annual grant amount at $300,000 per proposal to encourage, make sure we do maintain a national network. Similar to previous RFA, require that each proposal must address the coordination, and we recommend at least two additional areas of emphasis. And also, as someone else mentioned, we recommend that federal extension funding currently directed to the EIPM support program and the regional IPM's grants program should be directed to the EIPM coordination program. And our take on the multi-year aspect is that successful proposals should be awarded as a four-year continuation grant. As far as the next RFA, we understand it might be released sometime this summer. And again, concern about trying to write a proposal in the middle of the summer when we all have busy research and extension programs, we recommend that, the due date be no earlier than mid-September. Thank you.
Hello, I'm Mike Board from Michigan State University IPM program coordinator, and I'm trying to differentiate some things. I have some messages I wanted to share from my institution, and then also I'm part of the North Central region, so thank you, Bob. I thought it would be nice to just follow up with you. Everything is pretty consistent, and then I have a few observations. From Michigan State University's point of view, I contacted administrative folks and other folks to get some input on what to share with you all. And what came out very consistently were two things. The idea of the length of time of these proposals and the nuances, if you call them continuation or not, I don't understand that. The basic, well, I do, I think, but I won't get into that. The essence is that we're talking about program building. And we're talking about trying to keep people, good people, on, and trying to compare their worth, the program building, and their own judgment. Do I stick on to a year-to-year program, or do I move elsewhere? So the idea of a continuation as long as possible, and our understanding of how CSRES works, that means 4 years with a no-cost extension for an additional year. Again, I'm going to give you concepts, and it's you all to evaluate how this is working out. This time to release the RFA and all that, I'm not going to speak to that. I'm going to speak to when my institution would like to see the funds or some letter so that they could implement. We could set up an account to keep these good people on. And that letter has to come by October 1 of each year. So will somehow live to get this going, but it's always trying to catch up and working with. We've had a wonderful extension director, and he's guaranteed funds for our program this year. But for me to go back every year and say, oh well, no, we got to get an October 1 letter, and we might as well start it now, or as soon as possible to make that conversion. Now I'd like to go over to some points and just to say some things. Oh yes, the third one. This is a little interpretive on my part, but the general message was that institutionally and consistent with everything I've heard is the network is valuable and important. Just as a resolution, what I heard from what we did is we pitched a modest increase. Ourselves and our institution, we didn't ask for double the funds. We did ask for a modest increase, and we were fortunate. We did get a modest increase. But I think that came out is that we appreciate and understand the national network and want to be part of a national network. We think that strengthens us, does not, as well as everyone else. That's coming from our administrators, that's coming from our staff. And so when I hear things like everyone should be funded if proposals are acceptable, I don't know how that works out. I just wanted to provide the concept of that, the importance of the national network has to somehow come through, and we're talking about a program and not specific projects that have a longevity of 1 year, 2 year, or whatever. And so those were the three consistent things can come institutionally. Things that I think are consistent now that are my comments is that on this hearing about panel composition, I heard two things, and I just want to pitch in. I think panel has to be composed at least in part out of coordinators or others that run programs in extension. They have an appreciation of program building. Someone mentioned about how about IPM centers. I would say, just how about the chairs of our regional coordinating committees and our co-chairs? We all have served on panels where, when our proposal is reviewed, we step out of the room. It's completely functional. Who not better to serve program evaluation than people who are committed to program building? The aspect about going competitive to make you big, again, I already alluded to that. Our concept is that these are infrastructure dollars upon which we leverage, and I totally agree with you. These are leveraging dollars, and our ratio is about like yours, and we just, it's so fundamental. It's so fundamental to keep this core activities in place. The only one I'm struggling with is this, how to reflect your RFA that it's all about program building and not a couple together of projects. I think major program elements that make a good IPM program are coordination within your institution, across disciplines, across units, etc. And then I'm happy with the word collaboration myself, because that reflects coordination across agencies, regions, etc. Other program elements that I didn't see in the RFA that I saw in our comments back was a very good communications. So that's program building. And then all these program elements, I think, well, maybe they should all be wrapped into something about what are your continuing program thrusts, and then let you as a coordinator and your team that is writing the proposal pitch your program thrusts that are continuing, that are focus of your program. And then what? And then maybe have a special thing, mini grants, where that could be part of it. Part of it could be emerging issues. How you have built your program to reflect the needs of your state, and that I think is really core. And we've got to allow folks to pitch the needs of their state in their program construct. And all your current program, what do you all call them? Areas of emphasis. I think are just examples in paragraph. Thank you. Oh, one last thing. This relates to network value. I believe the panel should continue to allow the question, what were the previous funding levels? I believe you all did that, possibly this time, the word amount, and I think that's a valid question. Thank you.
My name is Doug Walsh, and I'm the IPM coordinator for Washington State. And I was the current chair this year for the Western Region IPM Committee. I think most of what I thought has already been said. I do fear in the long term that when our IPM programs that really do have a documented history of putting out long-term outputs, and I fear with this competitive program that we're going to become a sound bite IPM program where we're going to be measured by our short-term outcomes, which isn't necessarily conducive to this whole theory of having a program. Now, I too did get my review from the review panel, and one of the criticisms that I was given was that I did not have an extant advisory board. And for those of us in the West that have relatively large programs, or large states, but still relatively small programs, I all too often wind up relying on the usual suspects for my help in advisory boards and committees, etc. And, it's just a tough thing to get a group of qualified individuals together to meet as an advisory board, particularly when you consider that the 3D funds really were just a minor component of the overall IPM program that we have. And I'm you know, relatively large state like Washington State. Thank you.
My name is Peter Ellsworth. I'm with the University of Arizona. I'm the IPM coordinator. I echo many of the comments that were made before, but like Diane, for the record, I'd like to repeat some of them so they show the weight of additional folks supporting those ideas. Before I do, I guess it hasn't been said yet, but I think we should also say some positive things about the program. Number one, I think, at least in the West, I haven't talked to other regions, this is the first time IPM monies have been put in the hands of IPM coordinators in certain states. That is a tremendous change after 35 years, and I think we owe it to the fact that we did go competitive that that's happened. I think our administrative structure understands that when you're a PI on a grant, you get control over those dollars, and I think that's a powerful message. So that's very positive. Internally for us, another very positive attribute to the program is it brought people to the table that hadn't come to the table in 35 years. And I wouldn't say in a shark-like way. I would say these were people that really felt like they had been outside the process for many years, whether it was real or perceived. And this got them to the table and got them to discuss, okay, what is our programmatic direction? So those are very positive aspects of going competitive. And I think we should look at this as an opportunity because I think ultimately this will sell the overall program more. And somebody asked for $20 million. I don't think you can get that in a formula-funded program. But I think you can in a competitive program. I think we can start out with those things. So those are positive elements. Page limits, I'm right on board with Paul Jepson. Something has to be done very sensible there. This was terribly difficult procedure for anyone looking at six emphasis areas plus coordination plus collaboration. It was eight elements that had to be addressed. It was almost ludicrous putting it together. So I would support some sort of page limit by emphasis area. I also want to make some comments about the panel. I think something that hasn't been brought up, I don't know if it's workable in this scenario, but I wonder if this is another example where there's a need for a relevancy panel as a separate process for this. I was very disturbed by some of the comments that we received that were very much value judgments as to who and where we should be doing what IPM and who should benefit and what clientele should be the subject of our IPM programs. And I don't think that's an appropriate technical review question. It could be a relevancy question, though, and I would be in support of a relevancy panel. Otherwise, if that doesn't happen, I think instructions to the panel should be that there should be evidence of stakeholder input to those priorities, and whether those priorities are in alignment with whatever political persuasion those panelists have is immaterial. If there's evidence of stakeholder input to our program planning, then it shouldn't matter who benefits, whether it's big ag or little ag, specialty ag, organic, backyard garden, whatever it is, you should have some sort of stakeholder process. I'm in favor of the continuation model. I think 3 years is a sensible and reasonable limit to work with personnel and give them some assurance of continuity. I am a little concerned by some of the words that were used. I'm not sure they meant it when the comments were made. There was a lot of comment about supporting ongoing programming, and that's fine, but I'm not really interested in supporting the status quo. I am interested in supporting the infrastructure, but we should have the latitude to develop some new areas. As I said, we brought new people into our process, and they had some expectation that they might get something out of it. And when you're zeroed out by emphasis area, it's hard to make those reallocations. But we want to be able to have the freedom, if we can articulate again, if the stakeholders have been addressed in some way or there's a plan for addressing them, that we can embark upon new areas and mine these new areas because we need to reach new audiences all the time. I'm on board with the comments about collaboration. I think it's a key function of what we do, whether you decide to reward that by making a higher cap or going the other direction and just making it part of the point scale that's applied to everybody equivalently across all areas, that would be fine. I am completely against, I hate to single out anyone, but I'm completely against the suggestion I just heard that the panel be given the information about past formula funding or any regional distributions of monies or even what they received previously. I think that's completely antithetical to a competitive program. I understand everybody has infrastructures they're trying to protect, but I cannot believe that the wisdom of legislators in 1972 that developed the formula that governs this should be governing us today. And I don't think we should give those panels that kind of guidelines. Let them see the cream rise to the top and support it. That is a problem, but I think in the continuation model you have an opportunity to backfill and get people into the program later on. And that goes for regional limits too. I don't know how well people know where the money goes regionally, but I know the IPM center model has been very contentious on the caps that go out by regions because they're equal, and yet we currently aren't, we really aren't equivalency across the country, the Northeast region, Southern region, Western region. They're all very different places, and we shouldn't be trying to fit some sort of formula of dividing it out equally among four regions. That's very artificial. This is something nobody's mentioned, and maybe it's a no-brainer, but I think those are the things that we get in trouble on. I guess if we're really looking at a mid-July or anything summer kind of call, I would assume there'll be no requirement for reporting on the performance during the last granting cycle. Given that most of us won't see money until June, we won't really have an opportunity to report on that 12-month aliquot. And certainly in the future, I would hope that you would require performance reporting as part of the RFA process. But this first time, I don't see how that's going to work. Salaries, there were several comments from various people in other states, mine included, that the panels constantly noted that a large portion of what we were investing was in salaries. Sometimes they qualified it by saying new salaries, new people. Sometimes it was just salaries. Either way, that's a fundamental misunderstanding of what infrastructure is. We need boots on the ground in our state. We can get project money. We can go to our stakeholders. We can go to our commodity boards. We can go many other places, competitive and otherwise, to get support for projects. But we cannot get support for boots on the ground. And that's where this money needs to be focused. Last comment also hasn't been brought up, and it's a nuance perhaps, but I'm not sure, again, if your panel is not precisely constructed, if they all have a full understanding of what extension is. I know after being in extension for 18 years, I still grapple with people within our ranks that don't know what extension is. So it wouldn't be surprising if some panel members didn't know what extension is. But it is research, education, and extension, and there's a reason why we don't call education extension, and there's a reason why we don't call research extension, is because it's an integration of those two activities. And I think sometimes I constantly saw some comments about we don't see a detailed outreach plan. Well, outreach plan is only part of it, and there has to be a complete planning process that engages the stakeholders, identifies the needs, identifies and researches the problem, and then delivers and extends that information back to the end user and reevaluates. And I think that's what extension is, and that should be clear to the panel as what they're funding. I think that's in my list. Thank you.
My name is Chris Borgel. I'm the chair of the IPM program at the University of Wisconsin. I've got three points that I'd like to make. The first is simple. I think it's just critical that we maintain the network of the IPM programs across the states. The second is a follow-up to what Joe described, and perhaps put a little more detail to it. This current competitive IPM grants process was certainly a valuable activity. It helped to reinvigorate certain IPM planning processes, expand collaborations and situations, and ultimately the IPM programs within the states were enhanced. And I believe it resulted in the maintenance, actually, of a national network of IPM programs, which, for many of our stakeholders, was a major concern. So I'm going to make the following contentions in regard to the precious resources that we're dealing with at this time through the Extension IPM program. The process had many benefits, but it also had some high and significant costs. Some of the costs would include, perhaps, within our states, that we spent perhaps faculty or staff time at least a month to prepare these proposals. And if we look at that at a salary cost of, say, $6,000, salary and benefits per month, 50 states, we expended probably more than $300,000 in this process. And so that influences the how we deal with continuation. At the same time, while we're doing that, that cost in preparing those awards or proposals was also a cost in not providing IPM programming within 50 states or 50 plus states and territories. There was also a cost of panel management for the direct panel cost. I believe it was mentioned perhaps $30,000 or $40,000. There was also a cost for the panelists, 2 weeks, probably a week, the panelists in D.C., and a week reading through all these proposals. And so for 17 panelists, that's 34 weeks of time. That's certainly over a half of an FTE of faculty time, significant costs. And there was also cost to the agency to administer the grant process, review process, and the call, etc. So considering the economic situations that we have within many states, not all, but probably most states, the corresponding budget cuts that are occurring within many states, which are quite significant, and even the economic constraints at the federal level, and we're talking about a grants program that's a little over $8 million. It seems that we need to be very efficient in how we administer and propose, administer, and review these grants. In this regard, the current RFA contains the following statement, and it's on page 15. In future years, or under certain circumstances, CSRES may determine that it will support continuation awards. Therefore, I think the agency should seriously consider whether or not it could provide a continuation of the awards that were just given, rather than having everyone go through another round of preparing awards or proposals. And this could be a continuation of 3 or 4 years, as has been suggested. So the point that I want to make there is, this is probably over 5% of the total amount available that has been expended at a minimum. And how are we going to use those resources? Are we going to turn around and do it again? Or what we've done right now, although it may not be perfect, it has supported the national IPM program network across the states, and not knowing all the details, if it's close enough to good, is there any potential to continue it? So that's my second point. My third point would be in regard to some of the comments on page limits for the areas of emphasis. And I think a balance needs to be made there, because within certain states or program areas, if we are focusing on fewer program areas and we have a lot of activities going in those areas, we would also be penalized then for not being able to describe the scope of the activities that we're doing there. So I think there really has to be a balance. And I don't know exactly how that's achieved, but it needs to be considered. You don't want to penalize the states that are programming across multiple areas, but you also don't want to penalize the states that are running large programs across multidisciplinary programs across a smaller number of emphasis areas either.
Rakesh Chandran, IBM coordinator at West Virginia University. It's not planned to propose any radical changes, but something food for thought, if you could talk down the road. And this was based on suggestion that talked this earlier this morning, which was, you know, all of us is smarter than any one of us. I like that. So what I was proposing was, why not the IPM coordinators get together for a few days for retreat along with the regional center staff and come up with a joint or a collective proposal to address the needs of the individual states and IPM programming, you know, across the entire region, so that, you know, you address all the multidisciplinary type of approaches that Chris just mentioned, and also foster collaboration between the states and work together as a team that way. Also, this may avoid duplication of certain programs by different states within the same region. Thank you.
How many more people want to come?
I think let's go till 3:30 and let's see if we get a lull in discussion. And the time that we get a lull, we will go ahead and take a break and then come back.
That's the smart thing. He's talking in the
way. He's a professional.
Unlike the rest of us.
My name is Tom Royer. I'm the IPM coordinator at Oklahoma State University. I have just a couple of comments. A lot of these obviously have already been made, and I just think there's a couple that need to be repeated. First of all, I do want to say that I thought that the review of the proposals and the way that we went about it did provide some benefit and added some quality to the IPM programs as we had to think about them overall. Notwithstanding that, some of the comments that I received in my reviews seem to reflect an obvious lack of understanding about what extension is by some of the panel members. I think it's really important that we make sure that we have people that understand what extension is be part, you know, a major part of the process. This is essentially an extension program. The second one I want to reiterate is, I've heard a couple times, but in Oklahoma, wheat's the number one crop that we grow, and yet it's number four in cash receipts. In fact, it's dwarfed by our beef, pork, and poultry industries. So we've got to have something about animal pest management in the program if it's an important issue in that particular state. Maybe really need to think about whether we need to have all these areas of emphasis and categories and go to a system where we have the flexibility to be able to identify the issues that we have in that individual state and work on those. Thank you.
Coe from North Carolina State University, and I'm the IPM coordinator for North Carolina. Had several comments, but Clayton covered those on behalf of the Southern Region IPM coordinators. So just wanted to address two additional topics myself that I'd like to add to the comments that have already been presented here this afternoon. First is support of the state mini-grants program as a part of this EIPMCS grants program. We have a mini-grants program in North Carolina. I know there's a number around the country, a number of states that do as well. And it's part of our program that we're very proud of. My predecessor, Mike Linker, fought hard to get as much of the funds available for mini-grants program for a number of reasons, and I've tried to maintain that. First of all, it includes many extension specialists from a lot of disciplines, county agents, and other stakeholders in our IPM program. It doesn't assume that the IPM coordinator knows all the priorities and things that need to be done in the state. And since I've been in this job less than a year, that's really a safe assumption. It also addresses emerging and timely issues, things that come up that you don't necessarily plan for. It's always interesting to receive any mini-grants proposal and just see what kind of projects are fun, things you would have never expected or thought of, especially some of them that come from the county extension agents. And then finally, these are small projects in our state, $3,000 to $8,000, but they tend to leverage additional funding. A lot of these projects get things started and do lead to larger projects, and that really brings in a lot more money to the program or to the state IPM program. So after reviewing the funding recommendations that I received for my proposal and also the reviewer comments, after reviewing both of those, I'm still not sure if the inclusion of a mini-grants program in my proposal was a wise strategy or not. Just not sure whether, that is, a good direction to go. So not just this year, but, in the future. So it's also sort of difficult to write a mini-grants program, into a proposal like this. Especially given the time, the very short period of time we had for this cycle, maybe that can be remedied, with a little bit more time, for the next round. But perhaps it would, the next RFA could provide some kind of guidance as to whether mini-grant program, is that an acceptable thing? Is that a good idea? And if so, maybe some guidance on, what kind of framework for writing that into a proposal might be. I just would make that suggestion. And then the other, just had one other comment on a different subject with regard to the inclusion of the 1890 institutions in the program. I feel it was a little unfair to these 1890 institutions to make them suddenly eligible for these funds, but not providing additional funds in the pot to account for a number of additional institutions that are now formally and that now are eligible for these funds. So it just makes it even more competitive. And also the other part of that would be also there was not enough time. Less than a month or so for institutions that have not completed, been a part of these funds to suddenly have the infrastructure to compete for these funds or to form collaborations and stuff that, would include them in the process. So those are my comments. I appreciate the opportunity. I would just say, I guess one other thing, if you look at the number, sorry, I just would add to my last comment, that's why I think we had very few. I think there was only one 1890 that sent a standalone project in, and a relatively low number that can be for the funds. Maybe a direct result of some of these problems with the process, maybe not a lack of interest.
I'm Jim Van Kirk. I'm with the Southern Region ICANN Center, and I may be the first or second person who didn't actually compete for these proposals. I don't have a dog in this fight, but I have a lot of my friends have dogs in this fight. And we, I think I speak for all the centers in saying that probably the ICANN, state ICANN programs are, we consider, our most important and valuable stakeholders. So we're real concerned about how this goes. I want to echo one minor thing that Steve just mentioned about the multi-institutional aspect. The RFA did encourage some partnership across multi-institutional lines, but there is a cost to that when it really happens. If nothing else, there's more phone calls, more meetings, and so forth. So I think that just should be considered somehow in the limits. Like IPM centers, the real value, I think, of state IPM programs is not the big pot of money. This, in any case, it's really a small pot of money. And all these people leverage that money by acting as catalysts and facilitators. And you've reported on these impacts year after year about the leverage job. We heard somebody, I think Paul said, you know, 8 or 9 times. That's not an unusual number for the leverage. And if you take that philosophy of the importance is the leverage, that's where this idea of raising the limits on coordination comes from. And I would take it a step farther and say that this RFA ought to make discretionary use of funds as much as possible for the IPM coordinators so that they can act quickly. They can do things like mini-grants where they don't know when they write the proposal what they're going to fund. But they can describe to you a process of how they're going to pick good things to fund. I would point out, you've developed one model that you just used for this RFA. Another model to look at, and maybe you can make some kind of hybrid, is the model that you use to fund IPM centers. Very similar requirements. You were required to fund a competitive program. You do a competition once every 4 years. And it's a real competition. Real institutions have lost that competition, which to me is an indicator that it really is competitive. On the other hand, my center budget annually, I pass on fully 50% of my center budget in ways that before we run our grants program, we don't know what they're going to be. Depends on what comes in. I describe to you each year the process I'm going to use, how we're going to put out an RFA, how we're going to write the RFA, how we're going to collect priorities, how we're going to panel the process, and then how we're going to give out the money. And in the past, the Institute has been happy with that kind of description from all the centers. So it seems to me that's a very similar kind of model that could be easily transferred to this model. One last thing, and this runs counter to some of the earlier comments. Center directors also manage the RIPM competition for the Institute. I've been doing it for a few years, and I've been helping to do it 10 or 12 years. I'm a little bit worried about the idea of taking all of the extension money that now goes into RIPM and moving into this. There is value in extension money. Now, a piece of it like that, maybe a little $70,000 per region that we have for extension only, maybe. But I think when we put in that RIPM RFA, some incentive through extension to do those combined projects or extension only. I think the states and the regions get a lot of bang for the buck. I'm a little bit worried that RIPM would revert back to a kind of egghead ivory tower research approach, or at least that would be a risk. Thanks.
No more. Do you have anybody that has a burning desire to make a comment now, or can we go to break for 30 minutes and then come back?
So what will you be doing after the break?
We'll return to comments.
Okay. There won't be any summarization from anybody.
I was just asking because of people that are part of it.
No, I think that it's probably not practical to try and summarize that all of the comments are being captured and they'll be aggregated and summarized.
Yeah. Since you just asked if anybody had a burning desire, is anybody else going to get up and speak?
I was going to.
At least one more speaker.
Okay, now may I ask, if there's only one, why would they take half an hour break?
Well, I was going to go ahead and take 20 minutes, so.
I don't mind talking about it.
Are we still turned on? Okay. Bob Schlepp from the University of Guam, Guam coordinator. I'd like to make a couple points. Number one, how does the program engage the institutions that aren't here? I don't know. And I think the panel, or you should probably contact the territories that didn't apply and ask them, why didn't they get on board this year? What's the problem? So they could tell you, give you a lot of insight on that. And I'm guessing a part of it is the short time. We've already kind of talked about that. Maybe the whole process itself, getting on the computer, figuring out what they want, and then not having to delete it, and then having everything, go to the dean, and then the dean has to sign off and whatever. But I remember it being pretty involved. I think in the talk about increasing the coordinator to 75,000, that's great. That's really what Guam is always basically, that's the money that has really funded us. Now, the thing about increasing it to 75,000, I wouldn't be in favor of that if it locks out people. I really think the competition and the criteria should maybe be a little bit different. Coordinators, and I think I like the fact that you guys bent over backwards to fund everybody this year. Even if someone got some poor marks, they put the paperwork in, they tried. So I think the coordinator should be a lot of effort getting everybody on board. That should be a big emphasis. And, if we can get everybody, it's about the 75,000 level, that's good. I mean, it's like coordination is coordination, whether you're, in charge of your principal of a school of 100 children or as principal of a school of 1,000 children. Basically, you're still a principal, and basically you have the same sort of thing. So I really kind of think the coordination, the justification of coordination money is pretty much the same. So therefore, I think, it should be pretty much funded the same across the board if you make a good point that you are a coordinator. Now, I'm not even sure if the word coordinator is what we're looking for. I like the idea of coordination if you're actually coordinating. But then this seems to be more like a program director or a PI if we're in charge of projects. So I'm not, and some of us are that too, but then there's a lot of us are educators. And maybe the smaller institutions, I do more education than coordination. There's not that many people I can tell what to do because there's not too many people around me. But I do the lot of education of IPM. So I don't know. I mean, you might, to get some of the smaller institutions, you might say coordinator / educator. Maybe this is, in this way, someone applies for it and says, okay, I want to be an educator. I don't have anybody to coordinate, but I want to educate people about IPM. And this is what I, kind of plan to do. So, you might kind of rethink the title of that. And the other thing, I think the coordinator, in the past, we've done our yearly reports, this is what I've done, and here it is. And, on a yearly basis, that seems to work pretty good. Now, if you have the project approach, I kind of like the idea of multi-year for projects, where you're saying you want to work with controlling a disease or insect problem on strawberries, and you want to, do this for the next 4 years. So it might be possible that the coordinator is a yearly type thing, and then the project areas are all multi-year.
And also by having that multi-year approach, you can ask for more money, have more a longer staying project. So that's about it. Thank you.
Any others that would like to comment at this time? Okay, let's go ahead and go to a break. At the end of the break in 30 minutes, we will resume, and anyone that wants to have an opportunity to add more comments, that time period extends until 5:30. So the mic is essentially open until that time. But right now, let's go to break. Thank you all for your comments.